Hello, friends and fans of Conspiracy Pill. This is PJ Williams with another episode of Real Conspiracies. That's R-E-E-L, as in movie reel. And if you're not familiar with this, this is a series that I started where I wanted to dive into the different hidden messages and hidden symbolism and conspiracy motifs and messages inside of your favorite movies and video games. And so far, I've only done Inception and Death Stranding, and I think they're both great episodes. But before we get into this one, I just have to tell you that my original concept for this was to have a guest on every time to do an hour to an hour and a half long, like full podcast episodes where me and a guest watched a movie or played a game and then want to talk about all the hidden messages and stuff inside of that and get it really conspiracy pilled on these topics. And then I thought, well, maybe I should do some shorter form content. So I was doing 10 to 20 minute kind of scripted, more straight to the point videos. And I think they're really good. I hope you enjoy them. But this time it turned out that Paranoid American had us on his show, and we were talking about this idea that Mission Impossible is like this secret message about Scientology. And I thought it was really fascinating, so I invited him on and ended up kind of doing an episode in the original way that I had thought about doing these. So I just want to say, please watch the episode, enjoy it. Let me know what you like. If you like the shorter form content, if you like the kind of format with a guest and going back and forth and having it be a little bit longer, I'd be interested to hear what you guys say. And I'm also interested to hear what other movies or video games or things like that you'd like me to cover in the future. I'm going to try to get these out a lot more regularly. But without any further ado, we're going to be talking about Mission Impossible with Paranoid American. This is a great episode. I hope you guys enjoy it. We were talking on your show, like, I feel like a month or so ago. Time is lost to me. But we got like this side tangent about Mission Impossible and your theory that it had like some kind of secret Scientology message in it. And I thought it was so fascinating that I wanted to bring it on and do an episode for Real Conspiracies and kind of reboot this series that I've let fall to the wayside. So welcome to Conspiracy Pill. Welcome to the Real Conspiracies. Paranoid American, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Thank you. And yeah, I guarantee that I'm going to convince you of at least one of two things. One is that the Mission Impossible series is about Scientology, unequivocally, like beyond woo-woo, like, oh, if you look at this through a lens, like it is legitimately about Scientology. And two, I might convince you to join Scientology. We don't, well, at least one of those two, and I'll be happy.
All right. I love it. Who do you have to worship in Scientology? It's like Zulu or something like that?
Xenu.
Yeah, get his name. There we go.
Put some respect on his name.
I do have to, yeah. If I'm going to become an inherent of Scientology, I have to put some respect there. I went to a Scientology building once, and it was probably the most freaked out I've ever been, feeling like I was going to get drafted into a cult. Have you ever been inside of one of the Scientology buildings?
I have. But did you know where you were when you went there? Did you know anything about Scientology?
A little bit. It was kind of a curiosity thing. Me and Abby were hanging out, and we're just like, let's check out this Scientology building and see how weird it is. And then we just started like snooping, and it's like it was in Detroit, and it's got like 20 stories high. And no one told us we could go upstairs, but we just kept going upstairs. And like, I think at some point they're just going to abduct us.
I got lured into a Scientology building as a young child, actually. Yeah. I was on vacation somewhere in Pennsylvania outside of like Intercourse, which is like a fun name to say.
Fun name all for, Amish. Yeah.
And there was like a pretzel place where you could make your own sourdough pretzel, just like, you know, the Hanover Snyder family did and everything. But they weren't open yet. So I was just like wandering around. I think I was like 13 or 14. I'm wandering around, and I saw what looked like this Pantheon style like church building, and it said Scientology, and the T was like a big cross, and I was raised Roman Catholic. So I was like, wait, does that mean that like they believe in Jesus and science? That kind of sounds cool. So I like worked my way over there, and I went inside thinking, because it almost looked like a museum.
Right.
And then once I went inside, it was like, oh, this isn't a museum. It's a gift shop for a museum, because it was just like books on tables.
That's exactly what the one in Detroit looks like. Yeah.
And the one here in downtown Orlando, kind of similar, although it's like in a strip mall kind of area. But I remember at the time I was like, oh, where's the actual museum part of this? And I was like, oh, maybe they just reformed. And then by then my parents were like, oh my God, get out. You know, like, where did you go? Don't ever walk away in a foreign city again. So that was my first impression, but I was a little bit in awe because, I mean, I was still struggling. Like, I was in school, so I had like the left wing, you know, academic coming at me like, God isn't real and everything is science and be secular, you know what I mean? Because that was like the state-funded schooling, but then I'm raised Roman Catholic. So I was just like, oh, I wonder if Scientology is the union of these, and it's not. But no. That was what I thought it was. So I was intrigued and I looked more into it after I got home and I didn't quite understand it. But this was in the 90s. So anyways, this will dovetail into the Mission Impossible.
Yeah, for sure. I will say this last thing, though, is it's funny that when you base your religion off of a group of sci-fi books, that even your church still kind of looks like it's set up at Comic-Con in the lobby just a little bit. That was my first thought anyway. I was like, oh, it looks like a Comic-Con booth kind of.
It almost is a plus a little bit, although it's not as inspiring when you walk in and you just see things for sale right away. It kind of took me back a little bit.
For sure. So how does, for people who don't know, Mission Impossible is a series of movies started in 1996 and they star Tom Cruise. Hopefully everybody knows what they are. But how does this relate to Scientology? I want to hear about it.
Well, so we'll get the obvious stuff off the table.
Sure.
Tom Cruise is like the figurehead of Scientology, at least when it comes to the PR arm. I would put that forth. I don't know if there's like an official title that he goes with, but he clearly is one of like the largest.
Him and John Travolta are competing for that title.
Yeah, let's just like call a spade a spade. Right. There's no comparison between the two. Like, if you're casting a movie, who are you casting between Travolta and Cruise, right?
Yeah. It's Cruise unless you want somebody that can sing and dance a little bit.
Right. Or you're doing something ironic, kind of like the one where he's like the autistic fan that like kills people, whatever, from Limp Bizkit. So Tom Cruise, I really do think that if you were to take all of the claims of Scientology as gospel, I guess pun not intended, but so that, you know, you become a perfect person, that you can suppress your emotions and only exhibit the behavior that you want to exhibit and essentially just like peak living. Like, it's the ultimate like min maxing mentality. Like, you just max out every cool thing that you can do. And that sort of embodies Tom Cruise, if not on a personal level, on the sort of the image that he projects out into the world. Like, sure. That is kind of what you see him as, even to the point where if you read interviews with him, I read a couple from the Mission Impossible series where he, in his mind, it sounds like he's just the expert at everything that could ever happen on the entire planet, including his female co-stars' lines and their roles. Like, he would say, like, actually, you're not doing this right. Let's redo the scene. You be me, I'll be you, so I can show you how to do your job. And he would be like, oh, Tom, you're so handsome. You know, like, he would do these weird things that weren't helpful to anyone, but that's kind of the mentality of being like, I am the Optimus Prime of humans. Like, like no one gets better than I can be on this plane. And I think that that's sort of what Scientology pitches, that everyone can be that. Everyone can go clear and hit like level 15 OT and all these cool like techniques, or as he says, it's like a toolbox, like tools to help you live life.
Mm-hmm.
So on the surface, he being the spokesman, and I think even on like Mission Impossible 3, he had like a little Scientology tent so that when people got hot or stressed out or anything because of the conditions of the work, they could come and get massages and stuff. But then they'd also have people reading out of like Dianetics or just reading like L. Ron Hubbard philosophy. You know what I mean? So
did he offer them the expensive mood ring treatment or whatever that thing's called?
I mean, and apparently it was a real thing. Like, that's not a joke. And he had and I assume that happens on more than just that one movie set. But so it's hard to separate Tom Cruise, the person and the actor, from Tom Cruise as the embodiment of Scientology in Hollywood, at least.
Right.
So there's that aspect of it. But then there's like really specific ones. So like I was saying that I got interested in Scientology in the 90s just because I thought it was something it totally wasn't, you know, but I went online and the only place that I could find that had any info was these little groups on Usenet. And I don't know if anyone listening knows what Usenet is. And it's kind of like a digital fight club.
Right.
Like the rule of Usenet is you don't talk about Usenet. So hopefully nobody comes after me. you know what I mean? But Usenet's like the OG MySpace or Facebook or like the original internet forums. And I guess in like the early 90s, like 1991, a couple people just put together a channel on Usenet called alt.religion.scientology. And the original premise was that they thought it was funny, and they just wanted to be able to talk about some of the stuff that they heard about this weird like cult slash religion. And it kind of erupts and starts getting all sorts of traction, because there wasn't a lot of other like really cool things going on in Usenet. It was very nerdy type stuff. And then this is kind of where like the rumors and the myths kind of erupt. But my impression was that sometime in the mid 90s, people in the actual Sea Org, they got wind of this and they start looking at it. And it's the first time that they're reading things about like what happens to them in years to come, or like what their superiors have gone through, because it was all very secretive. I almost relate this to like Mormonism, like Mormonism. Right. When they came together, they didn't know the internet was going to happen. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? So it kind of came out of nowhere. And the only thing they had was like, oh God, don't go on the internet. You know what I mean? Like, just don't go on the internet and everything will be fine. But Scientology does not have that same benefit of ignorance. Like, if anything, they would have predicted something like the internet because of all the sci-fi roots.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And for people who don't know, Sea Org is like it's kind of like they're Jesuits in a way, right? It's like these men who sign these billion-year contracts because they believe that they're going to reincarnate that many times. And it started where they were like on ships, so they were like, they couldn't be married, they couldn't have like any notoriety. They're like this secretive, it's like their secret agency, right?
It's like a secret agency that takes place on international waters. So exactly, if you want to go down the weird, like Jordan Maxwell maritime law rules, right. I guarantee you there was like L. Ron was probably listening to Jordan Maxwell.
Yeah.
And he probably told everyone that you're not driving, you're traveling. Like he probably gave them all those like little hints, you know, workarounds at life.
Right.
But so the reason that I'm even like stressing about this Usenet connection and the Tom Cruise and Scientology is because not a lot of people even now ever heard about Usenet. It's a very small niche. And in the 90s, it was an even tinier niche, like the smallest of computer nerds that even knew there was an internet outside of their AOL window. Like, oh, you can minimize that and open up Netscape and there's a whole world out there. Most people didn't even know that. They were just in their Prodigy or CompuServe or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So in the actual movie, Mission Impossible 1, he makes use of Usenet, and he actually scrolls through the exact same channel list, and he actually gets down to like alt.something.vampires, which would indicate that A, they've used Usenet, the CIA and Tom Cruise's character, Ethan in particular, is all like they're fully versed in Usenet, because he goes right to this religious forum and he looks up this quote from like Job or something. But really, you couldn't have got there unless they scrolled past alt.religion.scientology, which 100% existed, especially in 96 when the movie takes place, because that forum came up in 91 and it made a ruckus by like 93, 94. So unequivocally, like if we take all right. of the conspiracy speculation out, there was an alt.religion.scientology on Usenet. It was full of salacious information. The Scientology as an organization absolutely knew about this, and it makes an entrance in the Mission Impossible. The only thing that's not connected here is they don't specifically show alt.religion.scientology in the screenshot of the movie as we're watching it, but every other piece is in place, which is, it's almost like the perfect conditions needed to create life on a planet. You know what I mean? Right. Like those things are so specific to all exist in one kind of branch of this. So that's my dipping my toe into this entire series is about Scientology. So I mean, in addition to them going through all of this, let's just take a look at the most, in my opinion, most iconic scene of the entire movie is probably when Tom Cruise is descending through this like 30-foot vent in the ceiling at, you know, outside the laser grid, and he has to maintain complete balance. But there's actually like a few different rules that he has to live by. So one of those rules is that his temperature cannot increase the room by more than 1 degree. So it's set at like, I don't know, like 72 degrees or something. And if it hits 73, the alarm goes off. If it goes under that, which isn't really an issue, alarm goes off. He can't have sweat drip down and touch the floor. They make 2 points in the movie to really stress that, you know, the guy has a condensation on the cup originally, it drips on the floor, alarm goes off. Then there's this huge scene where Tom Cruise almost falls to the ground, but he maintains perfect balance. He doesn't touch the ground, but sweat drips down off of his glasses and it beads. And then another thing of sweat beads up, but he catches it. So all this, like maintaining perfect balance, not making any noise whatsoever, maintaining a temperature within a certain degree, this all is like has very real parallels in going clear within Scientology. Like specifically, you have to be able to regulate your emotion, ergo, you know, body temperature, essentially. You have to maintain perfect balance in all interactions, which is quite literally like him maintaining all of this balance. So like every one of these different little aspects inside this movie is just like an emphasis on, if you're impressed by Tom Cruise in this movie, well, guess what? Like, you can do this too if you join Scientology. That last part's the only part that's not in the marketing materials. Not explicit,
right? Yeah, it's so interesting because we've been doing episodes on the connections to CIA and Hollywood, and I was making the point that like even these movies, even these CIA movies, where it seems like it's not super pro CIA, it's like as a kid, as a boy, you're watching these movies, you want to embody that character. And the example I gave was when I was a kid, Mission Impossible was my favorite movie. And I was like, I wanted to be Ethan Hunt. So I was thinking I wanted to be a secret agent. So it makes sense though, to make this like superhuman. And then you look at Tom Cruise and you realize Tom Cruise and Ethan Hunt are the same person. And if you're watching these movies thinking, I want to be like this superhuman person, how do I do that? Well, what's his source powers? His, you know, source of his power is Scientology, supposedly.
It's hard to understate that. So yeah. I want to say what you just said again, that Ethan Hunt is Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise, yes, is Ethan Hunt. And this isn't just like a transference that if you watch the movie, you get so engrossed. No, like he demands that he does his own stunts. So it's actually Tom Cruise riding the motorcycle off the cliff and the explosions going off and all of these like actual events happening. But if you were to actually sit down, I mean, you've looked into real CIA documents and probably gone through all the boring stuff. I don't think a lot of them are actually driving motorcycles off cliffs and like explosions going off. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of like subtle espionage and stuff, but it's not like one dude that's an action star.
I made this point actually again with the CIA and Hollywood stuff, which is when Great Britain wanted to showcase how cool it was to be in the Secret Service, or you know, the Majesty's Secret Service, or whatever, they created James Bond, and James Bond is banging supermodels and driving high tech cars and all that stuff. And America is like, well, let's just not go over the top and oversell it. Let's do Jack Ryan, and Jack Ryan is literally a data analyst, and it's kind of boring. Like if you've ever read the Tom Clancy books, like all the action is happening somewhere else and Jack Ryan just kind of gets on the edges of it, and it's not as fun and as sexy and stuff as like James Bond. But the American example of James Bond would be Ethan Hunt, which would be this action star. He's breaking into stuff and things like that. So you make a good point. I feel like everybody who talks about Tom Cruise kind of makes a comparison to him and Ethan Hunt, like they are one and the same. But you went to someplace different than I expected when you brought up the scene where he drops down and he has to like avoid the laser grid and he can't make a sound. He's got to be in perfect control of his body. My first thought was that this scene, when you brought up the whole idea that this is about Scientology, is this is literally a scene with Scientology's superstar breaking into the CIA and stealing documents, which has a real life correlation. This is Project Snow White or Operation Snow White, where in the 70s the CIA or the Scientology literally broke into all these government facilities, and I think including the CIA, and stole tons and tons of documents. I think that when just their Los Angeles office alone, they had a box truck full of dossiers and documents and things that they had stolen from the government. It's the biggest infiltration in U.S. history of like secret information taken from our government that we know of.
So, yeah, I guess I buried the lead a little bit.
Well, the
largest infiltration of the, you know, intelligence agency on soil was done by Scientology, and here we've got basically a rogue CIA agent breaking in and steal. Like it's just replaying one person again as the embodiment of Scientology. So it's like, here's Scientology. They are so advanced in every way, physically, emotionally. They can regulate their body temperature. They know how to use Usenet, and you don't. You don't even know what Usenet is. You know, they're like super, which is actually kind of funny that, like, in the middle of this high tech, you know, crazy action star, he's like, hold on, let me go and check my internet forum really quick. Like, I don't know, that's literally what he does, right? But it's basically that replaying of real events. And I don't know if the writers were all in on it, or if it was like Tom Cruise injecting stuff, or it was just like one of those weird synchronicity things where reality reflects itself in like weird and unusual ways, right? That it's hard for me to put my finger on that, especially because I went through IMDb and I looked up every single supporting actor, even like the uncredited people, and tried to see if any of them were Scientology advocates, and I didn't find any of them that were, not like not no one that even dabbled in it, or the writing crew. It was like just Tom Cruise. So
yeah,
I don't know how all these different weird synchronicities pop up, but they're here. Like we got screenshots of them.
Yeah, oh, they absolutely are here. It makes you wonder if there's like some Sea Org infiltration still going on, or something. I don't know. But it definitely, especially in the first movie, and we can get into the others, but especially in the first movie, it really feels like this is kind of a retelling of the real events of the break-in of our government by Scientology.
But, and I mean, give credit where credit's due. I think it's kind of badass that this, you know, Scientology was able to infiltrate the intelligence agencies, and
you got
to
give them credit. I mean, it's pretty cool.
it's kind of cool. So maybe if we're keeping score, the like reasons to join Scientology, just put one little tally mark in that column just because they've, you know, done something cool about
successfully infiltrated the United States government, and the CIA.
Right.
One score for Scientology.
And if you want to be like Tom Cruise in any way, maybe you can leave the bad and just take the good. I'll throw a little
leave tally the mark Oprah in interview behind. Yeah.
Well, I mean, actually, it's funny you bring up the Oprah interview, because that Oprah interview was on his Mission Impossible 3 circuit.
I do remember that.
That was when he did the weird like jumping on the couch. And there was also the Scientology video that I want to say leaked, but it was supposed to be like an internal motivation video where he was kind of acting very passionate. I'll just say very passionate about Scientology.
That's what drives me, is that I know that we have an opportunity and to really help for the first time effectively change people's lives, and I am dedicated to that. I'm absolutely uncompromisingly dedicated to that.
And like not blinking or breaking eye contact with the camera. And then that gets leaked onto the internet, and people were making a big joke out of that. But I mean, like, Scientology and the internet are so hard to separate, just like Scientology and Tom Cruise are very hard to separate, because it's the same time frame, like the mid-90s till now. I don't think Scientology has ever really existed in the public eye outside the 70s without like an internet there to tag along.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think most people's idea of Scientology comes from like South Park. So you have the internet to thank for stuff like that as well.
Yeah, well, and you know, props to South Park for pulling that one off, because that was probably a great synopsis of, because before South Park came out, it was sort of the Usenet, the alt religion Scientology Usenet, and then from there, it kind of like slowly seeped into weird pockets of the internet only. Not a lot of people outside the internet talking about it, and there was one guy, I didn't think to look his name up, but they called him the Great Bearded One. And maybe in retrospect, we can find whatever his name was, but he was like this, like kind of a tubby dude with a big beard. And he would go to actual Scientology gatherings, and he would like record them, and he would start documenting like really weird behavior. And this was the first time I was like, oh, maybe this isn't like Christianity meets the internet. Like, okay, this is something way different and even more interesting than that. And they would do these things called like bull baiting. Are you familiar with all these?
I'm familiar with the Great Bearded One for sure. Yeah.
So the concept of bull baiting,
I've heard of that.
Basically, you're just like trying to get someone else to freak out. Like, you maintain composure. It's like a weird way of aggressive gaslighting, where you maintain composure. And I think one of my favorite examples, which is very surreal, and you can find videos from like the 70s and 80s. Of people doing this exact same technique. But I would just say, like, PJ, what are your crimes? What crimes have you committed? What are your crimes?
It's kind of like asking the question, when did you stop beating your wife? You know, it's there's no defense to it. Yeah.
It's a little bit more subtle.
Yeah.
And they don't stop. And then you'd see like three come up and then they're all like jumping in and maybe five come up. And there's a really, on a side tangent, there's a really cool online comic called like the Elon School. I think it's ELAN.SCOL or something like that. But it's basically this concept of like aggression therapy where one person will sit in a chair. I'll simplify it. One person will sit in a chair and everyone that knows the person, happens in cults and like sort of like therapy centers, they'll just start screaming at PJ. Like everything that you did this week that was just a little bit, you left the toilet seat up or like you didn't refill, you didn't put the warm soda back in the fridge, or someone's like, I saw you, you know, pick your nose and flick it on the wall. But it's just like a room full of people just yelling at you, nonstop criticizing, meant for you to just kind of break down. And that if you can keep doing this over and over, just have everyone that knows you yelling at you for a small amount of time, I almost equate it to like building up a callus, like an emotional callus.
Well, that makes sense for the Scientology because they make it like illegal for their members to seek any type of mental health treatment or whatever.
Well, because that would break some of that conditioning.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's actually another technique that Scientology uses. So I got a quick story that I think maybe matches some of this. So one of my really good friends that was an animator in Disney when I first had started there, when he was in Burbank, he actually was kind of like they would recruit people from Burbank and from Hollywood because, you know, they want the ranks. They want to be able to brag that they've got all these people in high places. And my friend was totally, his name was Robbie. And Robbie was absolutely into it. Like, he's open for anything. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't skeptical. He'd heard all the stuff. And they bring him in and they do these things called like the regular audits. So one of the audits is you hold the cans and they've got like an e-meter and it's supposed to tell whether it's almost like a lie detector where it, based on your skin elasticity and your body temperature and all these different factors, the needle moves or it doesn't. So it either indicates you're at a baseline or you're agitated somehow for some reason. So the e-meter is kind of equivalent to that. It just can tell if you're having some abnormal reaction to something or if you're baselined. So one of the ways that they would test you is, you know, they'd yell at you or maybe give you some like negative comments or just kind of be very like offstandish with you to see if that would irritate you. And once you can get through like the really basic levels, then he's got invited to the opposite, which was this, like, you go into a room and you have your auditor, and the auditor, in order to audit you, is supposed to be superior to you, right? Like, they're supposed to have passed some kind of tests and like they are in some way superior in that regard. So the test is that you would just stare at somebody, like they would sit in two chairs. And I don't know if you've ever seen this on like these psychological experiments where two people just stare at each other for like 20 minutes, an hour or something. A lot of people end up crying. Like,
right.
they start putting all these weird things like, oh, that's my dad. You know, like they do weird stuff in their mind. And some people will get angry. There's all sorts of reactions. Well, my friend Robbie is one of these people, dude, that he'll just like start laughing, but like he has the most contagious laugh ever. Like unless you are a serial killer, you will laugh if he starts like chuckling and stuff. So he goes into this audit room and they're doing the eye test and no one's supposed to, you know, have any reaction. And he just like starts like doing these chuckles, and every single person that was supposed to be auditing would end up like breaking out in laughter, couldn't contain themselves. And it started to reveal like, wait a minute, like I thought you got like, if you're auditing me, you're supposed to like have no reaction. So they started sending in like big dogs. They'd get like, you know, almost like a Scientology Karen. It's like, get me the manager.
Right.
So the manager would come in, and essentially they couldn't find anyone in Burbank that could go into a freaking room with my friend Robbie and not come out laughing, like in tears, like snot laughing, because he was just like, so they kind of asked him to leave. Like it was almost like, we don't think that you're actually ready for Scientology, but he's like, wait a minute. Like, like you guys are the ones that are failing this test, not me. Like, I'm here to get audited to see if I'm ready to go to the next level. And if no, so anyways, that a really interesting personal connection, but that it goes to show the depths of what this going clear aspect really means. It means mm-hmm. that if someone yells at you, if they throw a punch, if, you know, you're going to flinch, what, you're going to flinch? You know, like if you flinched for any reason, even laughter, even like someone smiling at you, those are all fails. So it truly is having like 100% control over your body, your emotions, your entire state.
Well, they're just creating a shell out of people. And I haven't looked into this personally, but I've heard that there's like a lot of connections between MK Ultra and what they do in Scientology. Like they're using a lot of the same techniques from like Sidney Gottlieb to like break people down, or like, I can't remember his name, but the Canadian guy.
Ewan Cameron, thank you.
Psychic driving. And that they copied those techniques into Scientology.
I would almost flip that on its head a little bit. I would almost propose that MK Ultra got some of its techniques from Scientology, or they were both like,
sense to like get, you know, use a cult. Stream. Yeah, to learn from cults on how to, you know, create a shell of a person.
Well, because there's a very real lineage that goes from, if we keep it to just like the 19th or 20th century, it goes like Aleister Crowley, the Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard,
right,
into Scientology. And then from Scientology, it kind of spawns all these other things. You've got the Church of Satan with Anton LaVey fits into that. The Process Church fits into that. There's even this weird thing that I came across when I was in the military called Ekkon Kar, which believes that they have like a living prophet here on Earth. He's like some white dude in his 60s that lives in Texas on like a ranch. I'm making some of that up, but it's like literally how it works. And all of these things essentially spawn from this source of like Aleister Crowleyan magic slash occultism.
So right, and there's a direct connection between L. Ron Hubbard and Aleister Crowley. So that makes a lot of sense.
100%. And all of the things about like mind over matter is very Crowleyan aspect. And Scientology aims to make it seem like it's a secular version of occultism. Like that, I kind of think that if you were to oversimplify the goal, it's like you can fly, you can levitate, you can control people's minds, but it's not magical. In fact, we don't even believe in psychology. That's how, or psychiatry rather. Right. We don't even believe that drugs can affect you. We think it's all mind over matter, but from a secular Scientology standpoint.
Right.
But then South Park's like, oh, but you guys believe in Xenu, the alien dude.
Oh yeah, I love it. So let's get back to Mission Impossible for a little bit. You sent me some screenshots here. Do we want to start with the beginning? So the movie basically opens up with this scene where they've got they're watching this guy get interrogated, essentially, and they've set up this whole fake scenario for this guy to get him to divulge secrets. Do we want to start there, or did you have somewhere else you want
to go? Go for it. And the rest of them don't even have to be in any specific order. They just kind of prompt.
I only brought up because I had that image right here in front of me, and I was like, let's start with that one.
So I think these will at least help get somebody onto the fence. If you're at like a 4 out of 10, I hope I can get you to a 5, and then I'll let you figure out if you go back down to a 4, if you think that there's something to this. So the very first screenshot comes from the first, I want to say the first 10 minutes of the movie, maybe even less than that.
Yeah, it's like right in the beginning, like opening scene.
It's the opening scene.
Yep.
And if you notice the date, I don't even care about the time code because I could have paused it at any moment, but the date that's on this screenshot and the opening scene of Mission Impossible is March 12th, 1996. This is the exact date, March 12th, 1996. And I'll just read a small little clip from this article. It's from Watchmen.org. So the article says, March 12th, 1996, Scientologists lose the latest skirmish in the ongoing internet wars when a Dutch judge acquitted Karen Spank of all charges. Church of Scientology is locked in an international legal war to remove copies of their super secret scriptures from the internet. In the U.S., Scientologists obtained federal court orders to raid and confiscate alleged, in quotes, trade secrets from homes and offices of four of their vocal critics, slapped lawsuits on internet service providers, and sued the Washington Post, which ran a related news article. So this is very real. This is a monumental date in Scientology, because just like I was saying in the early 1990s, 91, all of their information slowly starts getting leaked onto Usenet. And then when that attracts the attention of actual Sea Org members, like the low-level ones that are trying to figure out more about this crazy thing they got themselves into. They signed a billion-year contract, And now they're like, oh, maybe I should look into this thing that I signed up for.
Yeah, because before the internet, right? Like they were just the only, everybody could only really know what the Church of Scientology told them. And the way it's always worked is you have to get into this store and then you can learn more information and buy books and donate money. But like if you're a Sea Org member, you're not allowed to have a personal life and you're just allowed to know what they tell you and you have no idea where this is going to go. So with things getting out on the internet, they can be like, oh, so people who have left the church have said this or people who have infiltrated the church have said this. And then they kind of know what they're getting themselves into before they're fully like brainwashed and committed. So this is a huge problem for Scientology.
And this is absolute speculation, but I just want to, let's just like pretend to be a fly on the wall in a high-ranking Scientologist. I don't, like, whatever, you're OT something or other. Like, you've gone clear, and you're like, hell yeah, I'll check out your new movie, Tom. Like, we're homies, we're both clear. And you're watching this, and you see that exact date in the opening scene. If you're high enough in Scientology, you're like, March, what? Wait a minute, you know what I mean? Like, this is the day, dude. This is the day, like, the Pope killed Freemasonry, if you were a Freemason, essentially. So this is Friday the 13th. This is them burning Jacques de Molay at the stake if you're a Templar. This is kind of that level of like a slap in the face. So it seems very coincidental, synchronistic that this happens to be the date in the opening scene. Okay, so that's the very first frame that I was like, okay, there might be way more to this than just like a flippant haha, maybe Mission Impossible is about Scientology.
Yeah, I want to add one thing before you move on too, is like for people who are watching this who don't know that much about projects or Operation Snow White, the stated goal from Scientology was that they wanted to basically erase bad records from them that were in all these organizations. So like if France calls America and is like, hey, this cult showed up, like what do you have on them? They couldn't send them files, like bad files on them. That's like the stated goal. They went way beyond that and like stole government secrets as well. But like, so the idea that this also relates back to that, which is like, we want to remove anything that bad about us anybody can say. Right now, like I think France and Germany has this thing where they're like, they're a dangerous cult. We don't really want them here. They were banned from Australia for a short time. In the 60s until 73, which is an interesting date because that's when Operation Snow White started. So I don't know what they got on Australia to let it, you know, allow them back in. But yeah, so this is like a continuation of that. It went from like breaking into people to like, let's just censor the internet, like in its infancy.
There's a great documentary. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it went into, it might've been the Going Clear one, but they emphasize a really specific point that Scientology was kind of just like a fanciful little club. You know, they were weird. They had some money, but the second they got actual tax exemption from the IRS, like if there's such thing as an official stamp, that's like, you are a real religion. Your God is someone to be acknowledged. It is that tax exempt status from the IRS. If me and you wanted to start a religion, we don't get that without a lot of work that goes into it. So, and I think that there's a lot of dates that line up with Operation Snow White, and you know what, let's go ahead and take another look at that application. Maybe you guys are deserving of a tax exempt status.
Again, so, when things are happening in 73, it's also while they're infiltrating people, it makes you question what they found out for sure.
This is like right around MK Ultra exposure. Yes. So like, good, if the government
73 is when MK Ultra ended,
well yeah, officially. That's the church hearings, but yeah. This is essentially the American intelligence agency is a little bit wounded already, and Scientology comes upon it and they find a deer with like an arrow that's already sticking in its side. It's sort of the analogy here. Yep. So they struck at the right time. But yeah, so I really do think that that's a little inside nod. And even if it's a synchronicity, there's a whole bunch more.
All right, let's keep going with the synchronicities. What do you got? What else do we got here?
Okay, so the first one was the screenshot. Mm-hmm. The next one is the guy that's just logging into the room. And I just wanted to note, it's like basically a federal office. This is, if we were to say Operation Snow White, this is the room. Like, if you get yourself into this room, then this is where the original list comes from. Although this list was the fake list, if you get it all into the movie lore. The original one that was like the dummy knock list that only had Eastern Europe.
Right.
So after they get there, they figured out we've got Tom Cruise that faces off. So the next screenshot here, he's saying the other day we decoded a message on the internet. This is them reading about Scientology on Usenet. This is pretty much how I interpreted this line, and they are not happy about this.
Right.
So the person that actually wrote this message, the decoded message, is essentially what the following line is, which is, you've bribed, cajoled, and killed. This is Operation Snow White. Like, it was about blackmail and bribery, and it was basically just about a brute show of force of, not only are we willing to bring this to the next level, but now we've got stuff on you. Like, do you want to keep playing this game? It's totally double cross inner espionage dynamics going on.
For sure.
And then the next scene, this is after this very iconic moment when Tom Cruise goes to meet with his connection, and the connection in the CIA is essentially like, we think you're the double agent. And this is where the rift happens.
Mm-hmm.
And what he does is he takes this piece of gum, and when he touches the two pieces together, it turns into an explosive, and he throws it in the restaurant and he ducks. And when that happens, it explodes this huge aquarium. And then this flood of ocean comes out, all the fish are flapping and everything, and Tom Cruise runs away into this ocean, right?
Right.
This is Scientology and Sea Org. This is him saying, like, okay, we blew it up. Now let's take everything that we got and let's get back out into international waters where we can be safe from the watchful eye of the CIA.
Well, it's L. Ron Hubbard as well, because when his wife got arrested for Operation Snow White, he left and he was never apprehended by the government or anything. He just got on his cruise liner, went out into international waters until he died, is what I think is what happened. Right. So like, as soon as he gets caught with what you're explaining is Operation Snow White in this scene, right? You've got the break into an office, which sounds exactly like all the accounts of these guys. Like, they're hanging out at the Library of Congress, waiting for someone to turn their back, sneaking into a room, printing off copies, stealing copies, heading out. They weren't even infiltrating the CIA as agents or operatives. They were infiltrating as janitors and things like that. They were infiltrating like the FBI, the CIA, whoever, as janitors, so they could get into these rooms and steal this stuff. And then, so you're saying this scene with Kittredge, he gets caught and then he escapes the ocean. It's perfect because it's L. Ron Hubbard. It's literally what he did.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you were to embody Scientology again, Tom Cruise, well, the other person that embodies Scientology would be L. Ron Hubbard.
Right.
The next screenshot it's so crazy. Like, again, this one is so hard to understate that Tom Cruise immediately goes and he starts surfing Usenet, like, on the screen. Like, he violates the number one rule of Usenet, which is you don't talk about Usenet, which I am also violating, but only so I can talk about someone else violating it.
Right.
And all he would have to do on this exact screen that we're on, if he were to just go into search and just type the word Scientology, this would give you the expose. This would tell you about Xenu. It would tell you about Going Clear. It would give you the manuals. Everything would have been found in that particular Usenet use group. So you can't tell me that Ethan Hunt doesn't know about the alt-dot religion Scientology Usenet, because they've probably scoured all of these. Because he even goes into the alt.religion Usenet.
Right. Well, exactly. And then on top of that, like, we think of the internet now as this like massive thing that no one could ever scour. But in 1996, there wasn't that much stuff out there. You know, it was like much more, it'd be harder to hide that knowledge, especially if you're on Usenet, of like what the pieces that are on there are.
Well, and the next screenshot I got isn't specific to like the whole theory. It's just, here is what Usenet looked like. If anyone's never actually seen it or used it before, it still exists right now. Although it's probably limited use compared to back then. But it says alt.alcohol, alt.alien.vampire, alt.alien.visitors. So for example, if you were interested in aliens, you might just type the word alien in your search and you would just get like every single, it's almost like a Reddit with all the subreddits.
Right.
So alt meaning, you know, alternative sort of topics, dot alien meaning, okay, now we're going to be talking about aliens. And then if there's a dot visitors, okay, now we're talking about like alien visitors. But if you wanted to talk about, you know, alien technology, there's probably an alt.alien.technology and so on and so on.
So if you're on alt.religion anything, you're going to see alt.religion.scientology.
100%. Yeah, there's no way that his character didn't know about this, and therefore Tom Cruise didn't also know about this.
Right. Yeah.
The next one is, I didn't go into like the biblical research on all this. I'm sure there's a whole nother fun theory here, but this was the reason that he brought up Usenet to begin with, is because he's looking into Job 3:14, and to just like connect all the dots, there was like a holy Bible that's behind him, and he sees that it was in like a certain hotel,
the Drake Hotel in Chicago, and it was Gideon Bible and all that stuff.
So it all these pieces fit together, but mm-hmm. this was the reason that they shoehorned in the use of Usenet at all, was just so that he could send a message to somebody about Job 3:14. So
right,
he's sending, you know, this is a movie about sending people messages on the internet in like a religious forum.
Right.
Okay. And then we've got John Voight that breaks in, he's bleeding. So this in my mind is like Scientology asking, because now Tom Cruise in the movie is a double agent of the CIA/Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like multiple double agent aspects where like he's pretending to be a double agent while also not being a double agent. Like it gets,
yeah, you know, he's like a triple agent essentially. Yeah. He's like flipping back and forth. So, yeah.
So John Voight here is kind of his superior in Scientology, if we go with this, this particular, you know, analogy. So he walks in, he's bleeding. It's like, you've done a great, you know, like you've hurt me so badly by putting Scientology secrets on Usenet. What are you doing? You've hurt me. And then the very next one screen says, I needed you on the bridge. So the actual path, like if there were a recipe or like the handbook to going clear in Scientology, the name of that handbook is called The Bridge to Total Freedom.
Ah.
So I almost see this as like, I needed you on the bridge. Like I needed you to follow this guideline to get clear, but instead he's putting the bridge out onto the open. He's putting it onto Usenet. Like this would be the thing that would take Scientology down if you put the bridge onto Usenet. So I was just like, oh my God, this is Scientology walking in on the guy that's trying to expose all their secrets,
right?
Not realizing it's like some weird triple agent operation.
No, that's really interesting. Like when you add all the connections together, it does feel like the message becomes clearer in this, with the date, with Usenet, with, you know, those subtle references, and then obviously, in my opinion, the overt reference of breaking into the CIA at the end.
So the next screenshot is there's a little bit of stretching involved. We're gonna bend around a little bit.
Okay.
But these numbers here, this is where they run into infiltrate and get the real knock list of all the CIA agents in the whole world, not just Eastern Europe. This is where that famous scene where he gets suspended from the ceiling, it happens here. And the way they get into these situations is that they trigger the alarm system to make it look like there's fires in these rooms. So the firemen go in, and anyways, they can only get into the rooms that have fires in them. So the rooms when they show up that have fires are 3, 7, and 12. Well, there were three initial Scientology, I guess, degrees or like levels. When L. Ron Hubbard died, there were only 7. So he dies, but he had in mind, he wanted to create an entire 15. So if you were to take the original 3 that were when it was at his inception to now at its full fruition of 15, that is basically 3 plus you would need another 12. So right in the middle is when L. Ron Hubbard died. So these numbers, sector 3, 7, and 12, they kind of represent the number of new degrees that were added over the course of Scientology. Started with 3, L. Ron Hubbard died right in the middle when there were 7, and then they added another 12 to the original 3 to get a full total of 15. Again, all documented in The Bridge to Total Freedom. So just another,
I realize
it's just like a little camaraderie going on here, but it just fit right into place.
No, it's good. I just thought of another one, maybe. I don't know if you have this in your notes or whatever, but I was thinking too, like, again, it can't be understated that Snow White was the biggest infiltration of our government. And if I'm correct, L. Ron Hubbard's wife, who was a second in charge of Scientology in the 70s, she got charged with 5 years in federal prison. Like they didn't. My point is, like, this is like high level treason. This is like a huge deal, right? And in some way, it's like they didn't even suffer that. Like the Church of Scientology didn't suffer that much. The people, even who got caught and blamed, didn't. They kind of got off a little easy. And there's this scene in the movie with the character Max, who is the one who's trying to steal the Knock List, who's trying to steal something from the CIA that is going to expose the CIA and make them vulnerable, make their agents vulnerable. And instead
of Ron's wife, essentially.
Well, that's my point, is because in the end of the movie, instead of her going to prison, they're like, what if you just stole stuff for us? What if we just kind of had this agreement? And like, I thought this was interesting too. Later in the series, I'm getting outside of this one a little bit for a second, but like later in the series, it's never clear if the IMF, which is who Ethan Hunt works for people who haven't seen it, he doesn't actually officially work for the CIA, he works for the Impossible Mission Force. And it's kind of a question for a few movies, like, is this a division of the CIA, the DOD, who is it a part of? And when you get to the sixth movie or something like that, there's this congressional scene. You get this Rogue Nation, I think. You get this scene where there's a congressional scene about the CIA and IMF, and they're like, listen, the IMF doesn't work for the United States government at all. Like, you kind of thought they did, but you find out that they're this international organization of people outside of the government who do things in conjunction with our government and the CIA, but it's not ever clear, like, who tasks them to do these things, why they're doing them, who's in charge. And I just find that interesting, if there is some kind of agreement between these people who have secrets on the CIA, who have some leverage and are working outside of them. I don't know, is that too much of a stretch?
I don't think so. And in fact, I oversimplified it in my mind. Oh, okay. Where the IMF is the real IMF. It's the International
Monetary
Money
Fund.
It's basically that role that sits above any government.
That's
right.
True.
It's like a globalist organization. Mm-hmm. And if you were to think too that what makes Scientology official is their ability to not have to pay taxes to a particular country.
Right.
So they become this like international financial institution in a very practical way. So the IMF being above and having Tom Cruise work for this global conglomerate that is like above any individual country, it fits again, like just another finger that fits into the glove. Right.
Right. Yeah. So, with this, I know we wanted to talk about some of the other movies. Did you have more you wanted to get into with the first one before we get into some conversation?
No, that was all the screenshots and all the notes on that one. I think I hope I get somebody on the fence. They're like, you know what? Maybe Mission Impossible 1 really is about Scientology disclosure and Operation Snow White.
I mean, I think it. When you proposed the idea to me for the first time, all the gears clicked, because I've been a fan of these movies for a long time. I introduced them to my wife a few years ago, and we've watched through the series together a few times. So like the gears start clicking in my head, and instantly, I know, I think I said this on your show, but my mind instantly went to, well, if the first movie is about Snow White, then the second movie is about their band from Australia, because the second movie takes place in Australia. Like, that's at least where my mind went. Do you think that's... Do you have any notes on that or thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, I mean, it follows the same motions, like right. The IMF follows the same path that Scientology kind of takes throughout all of the movies, essentially. Mm-hmm. But the second one also was about like a pharmaceutical link.
Yep.
And this one spawned all of my MK Ultra, triggers, because it's essentially big pharma and government research that are working together with these like top secret programs, which kind of allude to like mind control in certain ways, but it clearly is about unethical practices. Like that's the whole premise of this movie, is that it's not doing just regular drug trials. They're things that you wouldn't be able to do and for people to know about it.
Right. And I mean, for me, like in 2020, the most watched movie that year was the movie Contagion with Matt Damon. Because people said like this feels like the whole coronavirus thing in a movie that came out years before. And there's other examples of that. There's that book by, I never remember his name. I always want to say Ted Decker, but it's not him. There's another book where like literally a Wuhan virus gets out of Wuhan or whatever. But in Mission Impossible 2, the plot is similar there as well, right? You've got this idea that this big corporation wants to sell a vaccine, and they need the disease to sell the vaccine. So they leak a disease, and they already have this, technology, this vaccine that should take years to develop, but it's just on hand, ready to go. And I don't know, my mind kind of went to like, is this something they had been thinking about planning that maybe Scientology got an idea that this was at least a possible plan out there when they were sneaking into this, and they kind of are exposing this in Mission Impossible 2, or is that too much of a stretch?
I mean, I have such a low opinion of the government programs that actually come to light. Like, when they come to light, like, psychic driving is a great one. I mean, there's so many examples. MK Ultra is like a very dense topic, but let's just go with like the psychic driving. It's literally just record someone saying something and then force somebody to listen to it for days, weeks, months, maybe plus or minus some LSD, plus or minus induced coma through insulin, like all these different things. But the real technology is essentially just me sitting next to you real close to your ear for like a week and just going like, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck. Like just doing that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, that's the height of, and one of the heights of MK Ultra, you know, mind control technology. It's just, and now we've got it as like positive affirmations, right? Yeah. Like, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me. That is psychic driving in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gets dressed up and it's like, oh, it has to include all these electrodes. And well, hell, even the electrode version, where apparently the Stimoceiver by Dr. Jose Delgado, that apparently he was able to control a bull, right? That's like, he's got a little remote control and they get a bull to stop. Well, all it really was if you just like duct taped a freaking taser to somebody.
Yeah.
And then when they got close to you, you freaking tased them. It's not like they've tapped into, but it always sounds so much fancier because like the government is doing it. So
I agree with this. The more I study more MK Ultra, the more I'm just like, these guys are just shooting shots in the dark, and they just like, the real problem with MK Ultra is that they just did not give a shit what they did to people. Well, you know what I mean? It's not even that it was effective exactly. It's just like they just did, you know, there's like, if we give people LSD enough, will we get an effect? And then they didn't seem to get the effect, and they just kept doing it. They just kept giving them LSD and be like, well, what if we give them LSD and we make them watch what's the movie with the Golden Brick Road,
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, we just give them LSD and make them watch Wizard of Oz. What if we give them LSD and torture them? What if we give them LSD and sleep deprive them? You know, it's just like, it's not very advanced in a lot of ways.
No, it's MK Ultra was basically the movie How High. It was John Stewart's role of like,
right,
have you ever done it on weed? But it was just like, you know, on LSD in a coma. Have you ever done it in a coma? And that's a great way of looking at MK Ultra, is just throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks.
Right.
Because in my boring analysis now of MK Ultra, after I've looked into it for like decades at this point, it's really just the boring administrative, like financial wing of the CIA. The MK Ultra was saying like, hey, there's this weird guy in Canada that's playing, you know, audio tapes to people for months on end. There might be something to this. And then someone goes, oh, okay, let's write him a check for $7,000 and tell him to pipe all of his research directly to us.
But that's how we got files, because it was all the files they didn't destroy were all hidden in the financial records.
Well, and that's essentially like this administrative aspect of, I mean, CIA, like we were saying, like the Jack Ryan, it's just a guy at a computer taking up reports and looking at stock market, right?
Right.
So that whole tangent is a really long way of saying that I think that the government and the people that work for the government are great at what they do in these highly specialized scenarios, but when comes to like putting together a real conspiracy, it almost seems like they just watch a freaking movie and they're like, let's just do that. I can't think of anything smarter than the way that they did that. So when you say, did, you know, Mission Impossible 3, like, was this predictive programming? I don't think it's predictive programming as much as some idiot at Pfizer and Fauci. They were just like, hey, Fauci, have you ever seen Mission Impossible 3? And he's like, say no more, fam. Like, I already know where you're going with this.
I'm glad you bring this up, because I the episode we just did was about the CIA in Hollywood. And in this book by Trisha Jenkins, CIA in Hollywood, she basically lays out, like, everybody has always thought that because we saw planes crash into the Twin Towers every movie in the 90s, that this was predictive programming, that they were warming us up for it. And in fact, it actually seems like the opposite. The chicken and the egg scenario is that the CIA saw, hey, in all of these movies, all of a sudden the CIA is needed again. Like, all of a sudden there's reason for funding. It's like, what if we just did the thing in the movies? And there's a really good case for that. I just put a reel out on it, but basically Chase Brandon, the CIA liaison contacts a writer for the show, the agency, and says, hey, can you put this into an episode? And then he would put it in the episode, and they'd watch the episode and be like, okay. And then it happened a month later. It happened four times. It happened with 9/11, with anthrax, with Hellfire missiles on drones, and one other one, where it's just like, I think they're using Hollywood to like workshop an idea because they're not that creative. So they get the creative types to come up with the idea, and they're like, oh, that would work, you know?
I 100%, like, I truly believe this to the point where some people be like, you're not a real conspiracy theorist, but it's like, you know, like, I don't know if someone's ever been quoted as like coining this concept, but of whatever we see in the public sphere, the military's got one that goes 20, 30, 50 years back, whatever. Like, you've heard this repeated a million times ad nauseum, right?
Yep.
And I think that it's true to a degree. So let's take like AI as a really quick example. Sure. Maybe they had what we've got now in ChatGPT and generating video images. Maybe they had it 10, 20 years ago. But the difference, and going to this whole, like, you know, the CIA being inspired by movies and all this and workshopping it, and it's almost like their PR arm, like a pep rally almost. 9/11 was a pep rally, essentially. But if you were to like keep extrapolating that, the way that they actually go about all of this is by formulating different scenarios. They put it out into the public sphere, but then the public is the one that comes up with all the cool aspects of it. So like AI, they've got the government has like unlimited resources, hypothetically, right? They can just keep spending money and keep printing money and put people on it until like everybody's broke. So they essentially have infinite resources. So usually when they release technology or tactics or MK Ultra and they put it out in the public, either by disclosure or something, but really it's saying like, okay, they took it as far as they could by just throwing money at something and just by throwing people at it. But at a certain point, they run out of like the actual ingenuity.
Right.
And part of that ingenuity is people that are forced to work on something in a very like limited parameters where it's like, you don't have any money. Like now, like here's a computer, but you don't have electricity, figure it out. And someone will figure out how to generate electricity and like all that stuff.
Right.
So like in an AI sense, sure, maybe they had AI 20 years ago, but they didn't really know what to do with it. They had the tech, but what do we do with the tech? So then they release it. And then people are like, oh crap, we can do this, you know, make it do X, Y, and Z. And then the government's like, oh crap, okay, let's take that back. And let's like do this cool thing that they figured out how to do and put everything into that aspect. So again, it's like they have to release these ideas into the public so that the public can go wild with it and flesh out all the details. And then they're like, you know, if they're like, well, how would we get away? Someone's probably like, well, if we just fly a plane, you know, won't people ask this question? Well, it's like, shit, well, let's put a movie out and see what the actors ask. Yeah. And then we've got it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like crowdsourcing, right? You know, like I can't think of a great example off the top of my head, but there's like video games that have been like that, where the video game was just kind of whatever. And then it gets released and people mod the shit out of it and people like the mod better. I mean,
CSGO
is that, right? Counter-Strike is a mod based on Half-Life. It wasn't even like a game. It was just somebody like modded Half-Life and made like the most successful multiplayer game of all time.
Yeah. So whenever the government releases some crazy tech, that's what I'm thinking. It's like they intentionally are like, okay, now let's let the community mod it. And as soon as they make the right mod, we'll snatch that puppy back.
Yep.
And now we're going to throw our resources just in that mod thing. That's kind of how this perpetuates. So that is Mission Impossible in my mind. Like, let's take Scientology out of it for a split second and say CIA has their fingers in the Mission Impossible series, which almost would be silly to not think that.
Well,
based on all the connections,
I'm so glad you bring that up. So we talked about Mission Impossible 1, Mission Impossible 2. Mission Impossible 3 literally does have CIA involvement. This one, again, literally had Chase Brandon, the CIA liaison, working with them on the script. So what's your thoughts or your notes on Mission Impossible? There's also included J.J. Abrams, who also has worked with the CIA on scripts for his other shows and stuff like that. So you've got a lot of, like, the first one feels, this is 96, is before the CIA is officially in Hollywood again after they were in the past. And you, I think, made a really good case that this is like the CIA, or this is Scientology making a movie about Scientology and kind of hiding it. But then by three, it seems like you've got the CIA kind of like stepping into officially the Mission Impossible franchise.
Right. Well, it's more than, it's almost like a transference, because the first movie, if we say that's about Scientology, the third movie is basically them rebooting the first movie again. Mm-hmm. It's the similar premise where there's rogue agents in the IMF and they have to ferret them out, with one of the main differences being that in the first movie, Ethan was kind of rogue. He wasn't fully rogue. He was told to stand down or to abort the mission, and he just couldn't abort it. Like, he eventually does, but he kind of like keeps trailing somebody, and he doesn't just immediately walk away like he was supposed to. So it kind of indicates that he doesn't live by the rules, but essentially he comes the heel. And as we said, he was a triple agent. So like he made it seem that he was the scorned lover of the IMF and that he was going to take the IMF down. But really, he knew that the guy that scorned him was the bad apple. And so the third one, now it's like, okay, there really are real rogue IMF agents. So just like Ethan Hunt almost went rogue at the beginning when they said to abort and he didn't, this is the version of like, okay, they don't even think about aborting. Like, they're just going to keep doing their thing. And the best thing I can compare this to would be like a Bay of Pigs, essentially. Yep. Like, Mission Impossible 3 is sort of a modern retelling of the first movie plus Bay of Pigs dynamics.
No, that's good. I can see that for sure. I don't know if I had a lot else on Mission Impossible. It's one of my favorite ones, just because I think the action is done well, the acting as well. But as far as trying to think of like what the CIA was trying to put into it, other than just make the CIA look cool for recruitment purposes, which is like 90% of the 90s movies, was like trying to reboot their image. I'm not sure if there was a lot else in there.
A note on like a time capsule element. But the rabbit's foot was like the big token of that movie.
Yes.
And man, like, I don't think rabbit's feet made it out of the 90s. Like, they weren't cool. The second 2001 hit, people were like, ew, gross, get that thing away from me. Like, I don't even see rabbit foot keychains anymore.
Yeah, so,
I don't know,
true.
Just a time capsule thing.
I will say this, though. I feel like 3 really set up this really interesting concept, which is in the newest, which is in 7 and will be in 8, which is that they talk about this idea of the anti-god, something that will come in maybe digital and like just lay waste to everything. And when you get to the 7th movie, there's this AI that's literally taking over the world, taking over the governments, and they're kind of at its heel. And to me, it's like that was the anti-god concept coming to fruition later in the series. But I kind of like that setup.
And I, on the last note, I guess I've got on 3 is that this is the first time that it's not like a subtle creative injection of Scientology and CIA. Like you said, they had an actual CIA person helping advise on the movie.
Yep.
And Tom Cruise had an actual Scientology tent where you would go and get a foot rub and a back rub, and they would read L. Ron Hubbard to you. Like, so this is leaving the realm of like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we added this reference here, to like, no, let's actually get Scientologists on the set talking to the gaffers, talking to the actors.
It's just open outreach at that point. It's not hidden anymore, for sure.
And could you imagine being on a set? You're some extra. Tom Cruise is there, like biggest Hollywood star, you know, in the world, essentially. Especially if you're on the movie with him, you're probably thinking that. And he's like, hey, come get a back rub and listen to this stuff that makes me successful.
Right.
Like, I highly recommend it. You'd be like, hell yeah. Like, of course you're going to be on board with that, which is the whole premise of like this, not just Scientology, but like the CIA being in the movies. It's the a sick Ouroboros. Like, yeah. I want to be impressed and in awe of it, but it's also like it's this horrible thing. But it's a boring desk job that every once in a while you do something crazy, maybe, but it's a boring desk job. But they need it to seem sexy. So they get Hollywood to make it seem sexy. You get to be Tom Cruise so that they get people that will get recruited. They'll actually consider it. You're growing up, like you're a little kid and you're watching Tom Cruise. You're like, wow, out of all the cool jobs, I don't want to be, you know, the fishmonger. I want to be Tom Cruise. And you wouldn't think that if it was maybe Jack Ryan. I don't know. Like, are as many people wanting to join the CIA because they saw a Jack Ryan movie versus they saw Mission Impossible?
No, I don't think so. I think that movies like The Recruit, Mission Impossible, a couple others that you could name actively did drive up. Like, the Alias was another one. Jennifer Garner did a recruitment video for the CIA after being an Alias. But no, I think there's something interesting happening here in this point, right? Is like, you have Hollywood openly at odds with the CIA in the 70s. You have Scientology openly at odds with the CIA in the 70s. And then in the 90s, it's like the three of them start to seem closer and closer as time goes on. And I feel like this is reflected in the later movies, which is like by the, I'm not trying to skip ahead here, but like by the fifth movie, there's this open hostility between the CIA and IMF, Scientology, whatever you want to call it, right? And then by the sixth or seventh movie, they literally merge into one thing. So I don't know if that's like symbolic there, but it feels like when you're talking about the set of three, you've got Chase Brandon, literally CIA there, you know, making sure that they're making the CIA look cool or making government work look cool. You've got Tom Cruise there, literally trying to make Scientology look cool. And you've got Hollywood who's on board with both of these things at this point. So it's like, it is this weird thing where you had these three distinct, not friendly to each other things that are now kind of like, maybe we can all be friends. Maybe we can work together.
Well, dude, could there be the same way in like Mockingbird where they'd like release a fake story, but that fake story was really meant to be a message for for the right person with the eyes to see it. So in concept, right, the entire Mission Impossible series could be one of these encoded messages from Scientology to the CIA of saying like, hey, wouldn't it be great if we just kind of combined forces, because like we've got what you want, we have the hearts and minds of culture and the, you know, their attention.
We have pull in Hollywood and you want pull in Hollywood, because again, the CIA's whole reason that they claim anyway for infiltrating Hollywood is just PR. Like there's more nefarious stuff going on for sure. But like the stated goal is that they just were losing recruits after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And they just really needed to make government work look cool. And they wanted to, you know, keep people around.
Well, and there's one really important aspect, which I don't think is true, but like the stated limitations of the CIA is that they're supposed to be international. So if there's something going on inside the states, that's supposed to fall under the purview of the FBI or the ATF or the DEA, depending on how it's happening. But if it if it's happening outside of the country and affecting us, then the CIA is supposed to come in. They're supposed to be, I'm oversimplifying this, but like our international FBI in a way. And that is both like, that's what Scientology wants, right? Scientology kind of has a stronghold, at least in America, because of their tax exempt status and of their connection with Hollywood. But what they really want is control over other countries where they can suppress those criticisms of that. Just like you were saying before, like maybe they wanted to sneak in Snow White and be able to suppress things that like Ireland was saying and just like figure out what everyone's saying all over the place. That is the main selling point of the Scientology. If they were trying to infiltrate the CIA, they want the international connections. And then the CIA, they have the international connections, but they don't have very good rapport with the international community. Especially the country alone, but the international community kind of hates the CIA. Like, why would you like the CIA?
Rightfully so, but yeah, for sure.
So that's like, they're basically saying, hey, the thing that you want from us is international, you know, Rolodex. And we need you to help us like polish that up so that we can impress the people in our Rolodex, because we kind of look like dicks to them right now. And that's what Hollywood can do. So it very is like a symbiotic relationship if they were to get together and share resources. So the whole Mission Impossible series could be Tom Cruise or Scientology slowly saying like, hey guys, let's stop fighting and get together. Just like you mentioned.
It does happen in the series too, but literally like the CIA and IMF literally team up by like the sixth movie, I think. But
when, and I guess chronologically, the Ghost Protocol, I think, is the fourth
movie.
That
is the fourth one. It's also the worst. It's also the worst one.
Like 5 years. Well, okay. So you say it's the worst one, but here's the theory is that Ghost Protocol, the premise of the movie is kind of like, you don't know if Tom Cruise is who he says he is.
Right.
Like it might be a shadow person. It might be a digital version. Is he bipolar? We don't know. Ghost Protocol. And this was the exact same time that Tom Cruise publicly started to like not be the poster child for America. All of a sudden he has this falling out with his wife, right? Yep. Kate, or what's his name? The one that got away.
Katie Holmes.
So the Katie Holmes, and then the tail end of the jumping on the couch Oprah scene, which then gets mocked. So he kind of falls into this area where people are making fun of him, and they're saying like, oh, maybe he's kind of weird because of the Katie Holmes and the Surrey thing. So Ghost Protocol kind of represents the very real transformation that Tom Cruise is doing with his public persona with the outside world. He's trying to, like, you don't really know me. You just know this version of me that's being projected.
I love this too, because Katie Holmes looks enough like, oh my gosh, I'm going to forget her name too. Michelle Monaghan, who plays his wife in Three. And when Three comes out, the whole Katie Holmes thing is going on, and they're, you know, America's sweethearts or whatever. And then they get divorced. And in Four, it's like he lost his wife, right? And then you find out at the very end of Four that actually he's just keeping her safe. He's keeping her outside of the grasp of these people who want to hurt her, which is kind of like the theory around the time of, like, the Scientology was, like, going to make her a non-person. Like, I'm trying to remember the name of the woman, but the leader of Scientology right now, his wife,
Shelley Miscavige.
There we go. Shelley Miscavige has been missing since 2007, and people who have infiltrated are kind of reporting that she's not dead. She's just in a facility where she's not allowed to leave. They take good care of her, but, like, she's a non-person. She's not allowed to be in the public, and she's been that way for like 15 years or something. So, like, there was theories that this was going to happen to Katie Holmes. So I don't know if this is like a message of, like, we're fine. She just got, you know, I'm just protecting. I don't know. It's just a theory.
I like to think Shelley Miscavige got promoted to, like, precog, and they were going to try and make Katie Holmes a precog. So they're just, like, floating in a pool on their back somewhere, just, like, foretelling the future.
They've totally, like, become fully clear, and they can move things with their minds and read the future and all that. Yeah. Some Minority Report tie-in.
If we keep advancing through these chronologically, the next one after Ghost Protocol is Rogue Nation, which is 4 years after, I think. And this is 2015. And this is the very beginnings of what you were just saying about showing these two entities that are very real, the CIA and the IMF, and, like, hey, this begins the division. Like, this is them almost at, like, their polar opposites. And they mention, like, the syndicate, essentially. And here's where they start on opposite sides, and then we'll see over the rest of the movies, they, like, start to, like, come together a little bit. But this starts this new narrative that we kind of have between these two oppositional forces.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it gets, what's the next one called after that? I forget.
Fallout 2018. Fallout,
right.
And that's the one about the stolen plutonium.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, do you think that nuclear weapons exist? That's a new theory that I've been hearing about.
Oh my gosh. I haven't watched any of the stuff. I saw Owen Benjamin go off on it for a while, and I was just like, yeah, I don't know. I'll look into it. I mean, I think they do, but I just have never looked into the... I'll just say this, like, I've never looked into the evidence that people are saying that they don't, so I'll just hold off on my thoughts.
Okay. I haven't looked into it either for the sake. I've heard of it, but I haven't looked.
It's one of those ones that, like, on his face sounds so stupid that I'm like, I don't think that they're right. But then again, it's like, who knows?
It could be the big lie, right?
It could be the big lie.
Big enough.
Then, who knows? Yeah.
But the other aspect of Mission Impossible Fallout is the premise of false flag attacks, right? Mm-hmm. They have this, like, this decoy attack. So again, it's I don't know if in 2018 that counts as soft disclosure. Like, everyone should know what a false flag is by then.
It's also kind of Mockingbird too. Like, they literally call Wolf Blitzer or whatever, set up this, or no, that it's not the real Wolf Blitzer, but, like, they have this whole thing where it's like, you know, they have fake news and they're playing it for this terrorist and making him think that something happened that didn't. So there's kind of like a wag the dog Operation Mockingbird kind of nod in it, which is interesting.
And I'm actually excited for what. If Tom Cruise, I guess he still looks like he's 30, so he'll be all around to make like another 20 of these.
Yeah, but as long as he can still get his adrenochrome, he'll be fine.
Well, the wag the dog aspect, but like plus AI, plus all, because the first movie where he has the mask and he takes the mask off, when that first came out, it was impressive. Because you weren't watching it in 4K. With like hyper detail with HDR and all this, like it was a little bit blurry, so it looked real as hell. But now watching it, like, I rewatched, you know, the high def version of it, and it was like, oh, that man, like, come on. If you were standing next to him in that ballroom, he's not tricking you into thinking it's an old dude. Like, the ears are all It would look like Joe Biden or
the
something.
The first one's interesting too, because like in the later movies, they literally have an actor it's another actor, and then they pull the mask and it's Tom Cruise. But in the first one, when he does it, he is just that guy with makeup. Yeah. Like it's cool. Like it would work. It's like old school tactics of just like make the dude look old, but it's not like the full face mask thing that they pull off later. Yeah.
And then I guess, so from, what was the preview? The Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
Fallout and Rogue Nation go hand in hand. If you say that, okay, Scientology broke into the CIA, find all of their documentation, and the rest of the movies start this like slow disclosure, starting from really tame stuff that everyone knows about, the things that maybe not everyone has heard about as much. So like again, in the Rogue Nation one in 2015, they have that Solomon Lane guy.
Yep.
And Solomon Lane is Osama bin Laden. Like it's the exact same thing. It was a guy that they helped fund him and train him to fight the Soviets. But then after that takes place, then he becomes the targeted bad guy. So it does feel that like there's this slow nudging of like, hey, here's some information that we can release. We can release things on false flags. Oh, we can release things on you used to fund these people, although they might be a little bit weak, just because anyone that cares enough, like the type of people that would read it and care, probably already knew about that.
Yeah, exactly.
In 2015. But yeah. So I don't know, maybe it's just like little like nudges of like, hey, we've got more information about Osama or whatever.
Right.
And then, yeah, I guess Fallout was the one that
they could have been more, on the nose if they just had, Solomon Kane on dialysis or something, you know what I'm saying?
Chase him into a little, hut. And then also he's got like torrents downloaded of conspiracy novels.
Yeah.
Right? He's reading Fritz Springmeier.
Sorry. Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off, but.
I was just saying that I think the 2018 Fallout was the last one that I don't think I've seen the latest one with the motorcycle and the explosions, but Fallout, and that one also has that nod towards the global surveillance aspect, like you know, a la Edward Snowden in a way,
right?
Which came out after we knew about Snowden. So at this point, it's almost like Mission Impossible is no longer using their Operation Snow White intel. Now they're going with WikiLeaks and Snowden as their premise, like in a real way, not like hinting at it. Like they're actually using those kind of disclosures.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, anything that would have gathered in the 70s is probably, you know, out of date as far as like anything interesting that could happen in the future. Technology's advanced so far. I don't know how many plans they had sitting around the 70s that they sat on that, you know, they're disclosing now. But yes, that one's good. You said you haven't seen the latest one, Dead Reckoning.
I have not, no.
Okay. I mean, it's part one of two. The second one's going to come out at some point. The interesting thing there, basically the plot is that there is an AI and the government is trying to control it. And every government's trying to get their hand on the new nuclear football, so to speak. And it just mirrors what's going on right now. Like nobody wants to pause. Nobody wants to trust anybody. You know, Elon Musk is out here saying, hey, we need a moratorium on AI. We're not sure if we're unleashing this digital god that could destroy everything. We really should be careful. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, he creates XAI at the exact time that he's telling people to slow down. I mean, it's just the premise of like what everybody's fears are right now. And I was listening to a podcast this morning, actually, Mysterious Universe, and they were talking about this guy from OpenAI who's like, laying out the case using graphs and charts that essentially we're at that point where AGI is like a year away because the exponential increase in AI is like that crazy. And he essentially lays out the scenario that is in Dead Reckoning. So I don't know if it's as much disclosure of anything as much as everybody's kind of feeling this, and it's just really on point for the time. So
I'll give you an example of the difference between the 70s disclosures and I guess today. So I think part of Bluebeam came from speculations based on the church hearings and some of the things that got leaked in those 70s papers. But essentially, the original Bluebeam was, I can't remember the exact name of it. They had a version of it that they were going to do in Cuba. It was one of the things they were going to try and take down Castro. And one of the ways about this was, this is so silly. This is like,
I know what it is. We've talked about it, but yeah, it's crazy.
The premise was Cuba is a communist nation Therefore, if they can get Cuba to believe in Jesus,
yep.
then Castro loses power because now he's got a bunch of Christians instead of communists to rule over. And the way they would do that is by staging the second coming of Christ.
Yep.
And the way that they thought they could convince someone that Christ was returning was setting off a lot of fireworks. Like, apparently that was like one of the original pitches was like, hey, these Cubans are basically Neanderthals. Yep. If you just shoot off a bunch of fireworks, they're going to think that Jesus is back. They'll all convert and they'll overthrow Castro.
Yep.
As silly as that sounds, that was kind of one of the ideas that got pitched and never really like took hold. They did the Bay of Pigs thing and a few other. They tried to put thallium in his shoes and they tried to poison
exploding
it.
I think the closest cigars. They came
is they actually exploding cigars, putting LSD in his studio so he would act crazy in front of people. The closest they got is they actually had a waiter in a restaurant that dosed a milkshake with poison, but apparently he either like never drank it or brought in the wrong one, or the poison like froze,
or he's Rasputin 2.0.
Right. Well, yeah. But that is a very real scenario where they were like, hey, we're going to project this thing and people will freak out and that will overthrow this guy that we don't like. I mean, now the version of Bluebeam that would be 2024, instead of fireworks, it's going to be drones, mm-hmm. or it's going to be holograms being projected with like a big Jesus coming down in the sky. Like the problem now is that everyone knows about drones and everyone knows about projection technology and stuff. So if you did see a huge Jesus coming down out of the sky, even if you're like a full believer, you might be like, is this CIA? You know what I mean?
This is what I find funny is like, aliens could literally land tomorrow and make themselves, known. And half of the people would be like, this is a psyop. This is Bluebeam. Like, I think we're at that point where it's like people don't know what to trust. So even if it's real, I think half of the people are gonna be like, you're not really a conspiracy theorist if you believe the thing that we're seeing. You know, we've been saying aliens are real for 50 years, but now that they're here, it's a psyop and they don't exist.
Well, it's I think you're 100% on point.
Yeah.
And it's the same exact premise that'll be used of like, Prince Andrew will be like, well, that's not a picture of me because I don't sweat and that guy's sweating. Right. So that's an AI generated version of me. And that's going to be the thing where it's the double-edged sword that first people aren't going to believe real things that are happening. Mm-hmm. It's just an AI boy who cried wolf sort of scenario. And yet again, Mission Impossible is at like the forefront of that. So they're kind of, they've got their finger on the pulse a little bit, at least what the intelligence agencies are doing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, well, this was fascinating, man. I love talking movies. I've been wanting to get back into doing these videos, just talking about, stuff that happens in movies. And like I said, I'm a big fan of Mission Impossible. So it's really good to bring you on and talk about this stuff. You want to tell people where they can find you?
Yep, ParanoidAmerican.com. I've got comics and games and movies. I've even got a video game that'll be out on Steam next year that goes into my research into the Satanic Panic in the United States. It's like a super long project I've been working on forever. The big one that I'm dropping soon is at nasacomic.com, and it's about Stanley Kubrick directing the NASA moon landings, and it's like a 40-page anthology comic that's hilarious. I mean, I'm biased, but it's like absolutely hilarious, and it's got every inside reference to any Kubrick-related conspiracy I've ever heard. And it's basically a love letter to Stanley Kubrick films in general. So yeah, you can find more details on that and everything else at ParanoidAmerican.com.
Awesome. Well, you guys heard him. Go to ParanoidAmerican.com. Follow him on, are you on Rumble? You're on YouTube. Follow him on all those places.
I'm all the
Twitter,
places.
Twitter, Instagram, all the stuff. I will say this. When the Alex Jones video game came out, we actually streamed it on our channel. So when yours hits Steam, I'm sure we'll do a Let's Play or something like that. It'll be cool. So you have to let me know what happens.
I'll send you keys. Happy to.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you. We will see you guys next time. Have a great time, everybody. God bless.